sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. I hope you're downtown at Bricktown Ballpark with your earbuds in at the Autism Walk. Welcome you guys down there at the ballpark, and hope, and I'm glad you got a little reprieve from the rain so that you can walk in the rain. But welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We are here to discuss lots of things, but mainly legal and title things and tax stuff and fraud with our friend Ken McBride from Chicago Title, Oklahoma. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Becky.
Ken, you sit in the president's chair at that business. Is that right?
That is correct.
Yeah. So, you answer questions for me personally. I love it. So, let's talk about the question I sent you this week.
Well, the question that that Becky posed had to do with buying property at a sheriff's sale, and just as to put it into perspective, a sheriff's sale occurs as a result of a foreclosure. Normally, when a person fails to make their payments on their mortgage loan, the mortgage lender, after certain things that they have to do, will foreclose, and generally as a last resort, foreclose on the property. And that basically means that they go into court and obtain a judgment indicating that, yes, they're owed this money, and yes, they've not been timely paid. And then after obtaining that judgment, they can enforce that judgment by having an execution and sheriff's sale on the property. So the property is sold by the sheriff as an officer of the court.
I have to interrupt here, and the execution is not lethal.
No. In this case, execution just means that it's a legal term, meaning that you're enforcing this judgment. But, you know,
In days gone by, we've had executions.
Things can have different meanings. I'm glad you pointed that out, Becky. I'd hate for people to think that you get foreclosed on, and then you get executed, and then they take your property.
Okay. Just giving you a hard time.
I know. It's bad enough that they take your property for not paying your mortgage.
Do you know something? That's very sad for a family to have their home taken away, but it's kind of bad for the mortgage company that has investors, by the way, that don't get fork over the money at closing. They write a check. A check comes from this mortgage company, and the borrower says, "I'm going to repay you this money that you already put up for my house." And then the borrower fails to pay the money. So shouldn't the mortgage company get the property back and get to sell it?
Well, yes, and this is like a lot of other things in our society. Something, a loss in one area can spread broadly to others. Many mortgages are funded actually through some government-sponsored enterprises. They're called GSEs, Government National Mortgage Association, affectionately known as Ginnie Mae, and Federal National Mortgage Association, known as Fannie Mae. And Ginnie Mae and Fannie Mae are both affiliated with and right now under government conservatorship and run by the government. And so when there is a foreclosure of a loan that has been bought by Fannie Mae or Ginnie Mae, then those losses actually get spread out, impact all of us. So, right now, a substantial amount of the mortgage money that's available is available through Fannie Mae and Ginnie Mae. So, in the other cases, when there's private mortgage money available, frequently it's available from pension funds. And so, unknowingly, your pension money might be involved in investing in mortgage loans, because mortgage loans are a good investment. And foreclosures are relatively rare. So they are a good investment, but when there is a default and when the payments aren't made, there is a process for taking the property back and then for selling the property to satisfy as much of that debt as can be satisfied through the sale of the property.
So I'm going to ask the question, if a property is at sheriff's sale and it has a regular lien that needs satisfying, such as a mortgage, but the property also has a HUD lien, does the final accepted bid satisfy both liens? Now, this might be a HARP that they're talking about.
It sounds like it could be a HARP, or there are other HUD liens that from various down payment assistance programs and things that that could be. I would, you know, I don't want to, each specific circumstance carries with it its own specific answer in that case, and I would not purport to give legal advice to someone in this context without all of the facts. But let me give you some general rules.
Okay.
That I would say, as a general rule, if there is a lien on the property in favor of the government, then particular care should be paid to make certain that lien has been subordinated by the order of the court to the mortgage lien, or make sure that it's understand that you're buying that property subject to that government lien. There are some government liens, and the good thing is that if you go in and read the judgment in the foreclosure, frequently the judgment will outline various liens that may be against the property and indicate which ones are subordinate to the mortgage lien and which ones are superior. And as the words would indicate, being subordinate means that they are essentially wiped out by the first mortgage lien. And then if they're superior, then the property that's bought at sheriff's sale is bought subject to those liens, and the liens would remain on the property.
Except for the mortgage.
Except for the mortgage. That's right. The mortgage is wiped out by the sheriff's sale.
Okay. Now, I bought a house at sheriff's sale one time that, and I was surprised, this has been many years ago, that I owed 2 years back taxes on that property. Now, I got a great buy on it, and I would have bought it even knowing that. It's just it was a surprise to me. And that was, oh, my goodness, I think I've owned that property 30 years now. But
time just flies, Becky.
Well, it does. It's a nice little property, and I'm keeping it. I go, and that's my little retirement house, little one-bedroom house in Bethany.
Wonderful. Becky, the key thing with regard to real estate taxes that everyone needs to remember is that your real estate taxes are not wiped out by a foreclosure of a mortgage. And those real estate taxes have to be paid. They are prior to that mortgage. They take priority over that mortgage, and so they are superior to that mortgage. And if you buy a property at sheriff's sale that is that has unpaid taxes on it, those taxes will remain, and they will need to be paid. Otherwise, the property could subsequently be sold at a tax sale, which is another kind of forced sale to force the payment of the taxes on the property.
So, this question from my friend that's looking at buying a property says, I've heard conversations that a tax lien or a government lien is not satisfied with the accepted bid at auction. In other words, the government lien is in addition to the mortgage company's accepted bid. So we're saying, yes, that can happen, not always, but yes, it can happen. And your answer to me was something about you really need an attorney to look at the foreclosure action.
Yes, and I would say this. If you're thinking of buying a property, if you're thinking of buying a property at a sheriff's sale, and you've got a pretty good sense that the property is worth more than what you might be able to get it, obviously you think that or you wouldn't be purchasing it. But I think that retaining an attorney just to give you some insights on the status of the title of the property when you get it would be a very good investment. And sometimes you'd be surprised how little you'd have to spend to have an attorney review it and give you some idea of where you're going to be, because there are so many variables. There are lots of different kinds of government liens. We talked about a HUD lien. There are government tax liens. There are federal tax liens. And
property tax liens.
Property tax liens. There are there are homeowners association liens. There are other different things that you would reasonably expect to see on a property that's gone into default for non-payment of the mortgage.
Because people don't continue to pay everything else and not make their house payment, right?
That's correct.
Well, we've got a lot more to talk about on this subject, and so stay tuned, because we're going to talk about HOA dues and how, if they have to be paid, right after this break on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. Boy, you'd better fasten your seatbelt this morning, because we're moving through material pretty fast. We are here with Ken McBride from Chicago Title. Ken sits in the president's chair at that company. He is an attorney, and he's not giving legal advice, but he sure is telling us how it is. We're talking about foreclosures, and we're talking about we want to move into the HOA. The Homeowners Association. But before we do that, Ken, I went to a listing this week that had a mortgage on this property. The parents had lived in it forever. It was an inherited property, been through probate already. So there were two siblings that owned this property. One of them thinks it's not worth paying another payment on, and the other one thinks it's worth a whole lot. So my advice to this guy was do a quick claim deed to your sibling, because they took it somehow through, even after probate, they got a quick claim deed. I'm not sure how that happened. Do you get a quick claim deed after probate?
Well, there are times when a probate will do a distribution of property, and then sometimes to clear things up, make it obvious who's holding title and how they're holding title, they might do a quick claim deed. If they wanted to establish a joint tenancy between them, they'd have to file some kind of quick claim deed or a deed of some sort.
Okay. Well, that's schooling me, and I like it. I love learning new things. So that's good. They explained that they had a first mortgage on the property, that the way they described this to me is the dad had one of these Obama loans, but it's just sitting over here. It's not really a payment. And do they have to pay that off when they do it? Well, it was a home affordable refinance program. So what they do is pretty much capitalize whatever you're behind on payments. They set it aside. And in this case, I think he said it was $26,000, something like that. They're under the impression that this just sitting there, and wonder if they have to pay it off if they sell the house. Well, do they have to pay it off when they sell the house? It's a HARP loan, basically.
Well, these type of loans that were designed for a particular time in our economy where people, perhaps through no fault of their own, were having difficulty making their mortgage payments. It was in the best interest of a lot of people to delay or at least assist people so that these defaults would not all come at once. And there was a general feeling, I believe, that the economy would improve, and certainly it has, and people would have an opportunity. Their property would appreciate properly. This property, I'm sure, at the time the HARP loan was made, probably was way underwater. And then now, perhaps the value of this property has come back so that it'll be able to pay all of these things. But the quick answer is that any loan on the property, this is probably characterized as a subordinate mortgage on the property, would have to be paid at the time of sale. And one of the things that I would suggest, if someone has inherited property or been given property and they really don't know what's against the property, if you know that there's a lien out there, a mortgage lien, you can reach out and get a payoff, find out what the balance due on that loan is. And that would seem to be a number that would be very important to these two people who own this property.
Well, because they need to realize how I told them how much it was worth, market value. And according to my calculations, it's close, but not close enough. They're still going to be underwater at least $15,000 or $20,000. If there was no interest on this HARP loan, there is interest on the HARP loan. You don't make payments on it. It doesn't sit there interest-free. So they're going to owe more than what they think they owe on the property. And so you just need to make a good, educated decision as to what to do. Now, the right thing to do would be to go ahead and sell the property on a short sale. And short sale's another whole thing. And we can talk about a short sale. A lot of people don't know what that is.
That's very true, Becky. And I think a lot of people, it's unfortunate, particularly if they don't have a real estate realtor that is working with them, who understands the various options that are available. A lot of people think that they look and they see that there's a first mortgage, there's a second mortgage on the property, it's more than the property's worth, so we're stuck in it forever. And that's not necessarily the case. And short sales aren't appropriate for every property, but there are a lot of properties where the, particularly the subordinate lender, the second mortgage lender, or in this case, a government program lender, might be willing to take less than the full amount that's due to them in order to go ahead and get rid of a loan that's on their books that is, in a practical matter, not fully secured. And this particularly happens if you've got a second mortgage lender who the second mortgage is in default also. And so frequently, you know, in the right kind of property, in the right kind of circumstance, the second mortgage lender might agree to a short sale.
Right. So a short sale is selling a property short of the amount of money to pay it off.
That's correct.
And pay all the cost involved in selling a property. Lenders do cooperate with realtors in doing that. They end up with... the realtor gets paid. It's a very long process, typically, very tedious process. So you need to deal with a realtor that actually knows how to do a short sale. Do you know, I do believe that I did the very first HUD short sale in America.
Did you really?
They said they couldn't do it. It was against their rules. They just had to go through the foreclosure process. And I said, you know, I've read your rules. So you show me where you cannot do this. And they did it. This was many years ago. I think it was 81, maybe, something like that. Now, it was a long time before they started a short sale program on HUD like that. But you do need to know what your options are. It's hard to know your options if you are really dealing with someone that may be their second sale. And all of us had our second sale. So I'm not putting down a second sale realtor, because we all had that one, right?
Yes.
But some of us have learned a little bit more along the way. So if you're dealing with someone who hasn't had a lot of experience, ask to talk to the broker that probably has had a lot more experience than that. We're talking to Ken McBride, president of Chicago Title, my favorite place to close. I closed one on the south side yesterday.
Thank you, Becky.
Took me an hour and 15 minutes to get there in the rain because it was a 4 o'clock closing. So, of course, the traffic was terrible. I was glad I left early enough because it was truly just stop and go on the interstate down there. But I love that office. You've got a very nice office down in Cleveland County. And it was real convenient for the folks that live there. So that was great. So Chicago Title, my favorite place to close. It really does matter where you close. And if you're wanting information from me, go to my website, BeckyIvins.com, or call me at my office, 722-3232. We're going to cover the HOAs, I promise, when we return right after this break on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You're listening to Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate. I'll give you my number one more time because you might want to give me a call. It is 722-3232. You can always go to BeckyIvins.com. My last name is spelled I-V-I-N-S, BeckyIvins.com. You can look at the listings. They are ever so fleeting nowadays. They get listed, and we listed one night before last at 6 o'clock, and it sold by 6 o'clock the next day. And I worked how many offers on that one, Ken? There were 21 offers on that property. So if you would like, I'm not going to promise 21 offers, but that is a record for us. And we worked each one with diligence. We spent most of the day working on that and doing a cost sheet on every single offer and pointing out the pros and the cons to our client who was just sitting there with his mouth jaw dropped open because he was like going, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. I said, well, you're one lucky man because you've got lots of people wanting your house. And there was only one of those offers that was less than list price. So, of course, that sold for much more than list price. Give me a call. We'll put yours in a position to hopefully get multiple offers as well. And we do that pretty often, never before to that degree. So that was pretty fun to have that many offers on one property. Wish I'd have had that many offers, one on each property. That would have been even more fun, wouldn't it? So
if you don't mind, Becky, this is probably a good time for me to say we're in a position to see a lot of different transactions, and we see transactions where people work with a realtor, with a real estate professional, with someone who's assisting them either as the buyer or as the seller of the real estate, and we see those people who do it themselves one way or another. And I think that what most people don't realize is how important it is to have the assistance of a professional real estate salesperson when you're selling or buying your home, because there are so many things that can happen that can end up costing you money in the long run. You will be better off if you retain the services of a realtor.
Well, thank you. Do you know that I kind of run numbers on mine? And I tend to get 1.9% higher than the average of our metro area of the sales price. And I love that. Yes, we charge a commission, but we tend to be worth what we charge. Because if you can defend the sales price, know the market value to start with would help, but then defend the price. So... It is time for our word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing to help you select the right material to go on your roof, to find that pesky little leak in your house, or to replace your whole shingles, your whole roof and gutters and screens that have been damaged by a hailstorm. Robbins Roofing, 728-3700. Give them a call. We've had so much rain this week that I'll bet you might find a leak. If you were to look in your attic, chances are you've got water running down a rafter somewhere, and it's just being soaked up by your insulation, and it'll eventually get through to your sheetrock, and then you've got even more problems. So call Robbins Roofing, 728-3700, and they are going to help you out. Ken, I didn't even tell you what the word of the day is.
What is the word of the day, Becky?
The word of the day today is lean.
Well, lean's a great word.
Yeah, and lean really is the right to keep possession of property belonging to someone else until a debt's paid, right?
Well, that's one of the meanings, and in our context of real estate, you know, it's a charge or against the property. It's a right to go against the property to collect. It secures the payment of the debt. And if you, as long as you're paying that debt or paying whatever charge is a lien on your property, normally you're in pretty good shape. But when you go into default, that lien can be enforced.
So the difference between a lien and a judgment.
Well, a judgment is actually a ruling by the court that determines the outcome of some controversy and can indicate that one person or the other has a judgment that one person would owe the other person a certain amount of money. Then that judgment can be perfected, which really just means it can be recorded so that it puts the world on notice that now we have a judgment lien to enforce the payment of this judgment. And then if the judgment is not paid, then they can go through a process to foreclose the lien and seize the property and have it sold to satisfy the judgment.
So when Judge Judy on court says judgment for the plaintiff,
I'm not sure how it works for Judge Judy, but when a judge in the Oklahoma County District Court says judgment for one side in favor of the other, then that ruling can later be perfected into a lien and become a lien on a person's real estate that they own in that county.
Does it have to do with the real estate? If there's a judgment, say someone gets a civil judgment for damage to a property, their kid runs a car into and knocks out part of the house or something, and you get a judgment against the other people. Can that go against the property?
Yes. A judgment is just a judicial determination that one party owes the other side, as a general rule. And that judgment doesn't have to be based on a controversy that is directly impacting real estate. And the example, let's just say it's a car wreck and someone, for whatever reason, either isn't insured or they're underinsured. And they end up, the court ends up saying that one side, it was their fault, and they owe so many dollars to the other side. And let's just say that insurance only pays a portion of it. Well, as to the unpaid portion, there's a remaining amount that's a judgment against that judgment debtor. And if it's properly perfected, it's a lien against that judgment debtor's real estate.
So now we all understand lien. Let's talk about that's our word of the day brought to you by Robbins Roofing. Let me tell you, liens and HOAs.
Well, liens and HOAs. But before we get into that, I have one quick thing on short sales.
Okay.
We talked about short sales, which is basically a sale where some of the people who have liens on the property have agreed to accept a lesser amount. But in some instances, and this is a matter that needs to be very much transparent, the judgment creditor may agree to accept less in order to release their lien against the property, but the underlying obligation could survive. For example, if I have a second mortgage on my house for $5,000, and for whatever reason, the lender may agree to accept $4,000 to release their lien, that doesn't mean automatically that I don't owe the remaining $1,000. And some people, after a short sale, they think, oh, well, everything's gone. And then they hear from the lender that, oh, yes, the balance that we agreed to, you know, that just became an unsecured obligation to us, because the release of that security doesn't necessarily release that note.
Right. So that's with recourse or without recourse?
Well, it's with recourse and without recourse. It's one of those things that needs to be very clear, very transparent in the context. Another reason to work with a real estate professional on a short sale, so that everyone can be transparent. You may be willing to keep that liability alive if it's necessary to sell the property, but you need to understand if the liability is going to survive or not.
Well, and I've sold property where people accept with recourse a short sale, and that means that there can be a deficiency judgment, and you as the borrower that borrowed this money originally are still obligated to pay it back. Most short sales are not like that.
That's correct. Most aren't, but it's sometimes a very unpleasant surprise if you find out that you have continuing liability on something that you thought was resolved in the sale.
Right.
HOAs.
HOA. You don't make your payments. How many times do we sell properties and someone says, I hate the HOA. I know when I sell my property, I'm going to end up having to pay it. But they might owe 8 years worth of HOA dues.
Homeowners associations have become increasingly popular. And I think that it used to be that you would assume a property didn't have a homeowners association unless you found out otherwise. And now it's almost the reverse. I think that one of the things that someone needs to understand when they talk to their real estate agent is they need to have a discussion about each property and whether they have a homeowners association and so forth. But if you do not pay homeowners association dues, and the homeowners association has the right to file a lien, we're back to that word, lien, to secure the payment of those dues at some point in the future. And so that lien becomes a lien on the property that normally has to be paid in connection with a sale of the property. And if it gets to a certain point, the homeowners association has a right to foreclose their lien. Most homeowners associations are very reluctant to do this, and I think we can think of numerous reasons why that would be very disruptive to foreclose your homeowners association lien against your neighbor, but it can be done and it has been done, but it's not a very pretty situation.
Even on homestead property, you can.
Well, you can foreclose that homeowners lien, yes, on homestead property.
Wow.
It's because it's a proper lien. It's a subordinate lien, which by that it means that let's say you have a first mortgage on your property. Someone, your homeowners association decides to foreclose on you. If they sell the property at sheriff's sale, it will be sold subject to that first mortgage, and whoever buys it will need to be paying on that first mortgage.
Okay, so the first mortgage at sheriff's sale gets wiped out?
Nope. First mortgage survives.
Okay. Okay.
So let's say you've got a $10,000 of lien for homeowners association, and you have a $50,000 first mortgage. If the homeowners association forecloses, whoever buys at sheriff's sale, be it the homeowners association or someone else, would buy subject to the $50,000 mortgage and would have to either make those payments or perhaps risk foreclosure by the first mortgage lender.
Because the HOA is the one doing the foreclosing.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Because the HOA is doing the foreclosing.
But if the HOA, it goes to sheriff's sale due to foreclosure of the
first mortgage,
the HOA survives that, do you think? I don't think it does. Does it?
No. If it's the if there's a default on the first mortgage, and the first mortgage lender forecloses, as a general rule, those HOA dues are subordinate to that first mortgage and would be, depending on what it's sold for at sheriff's sale, they would be wiped out.
Well, if there's enough, if there's any money left over,
if there's the money left over, they would. They would be paid in order of their priority, but normally, if there's a default, there's very little money left over.
Right. Well, we're talking some good stuff here. That if you're in real estate, you need to know this stuff. And we've got to take a break, and we'll be right back with more on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. You are listening to Becky Ivins, broker of Movers Real Estate Company and leader of the Becky Ivins team, and to Ken McBride, president of Chicago Title. Ken, we have talked and talked and talked about fraud in wiring money on real estate transactions. Everybody's talking about it. I've seen disclosures where realtors are warning people, don't do wires unless you talk to the people. Be very careful. Are we still facing any kind of fraud?
Yes, we are, and the amounts are growing higher every week. The main thing for a person to remember is if they get wire instructions through an email, doesn't matter who the email appears to be coming from, call the title company to verify those wiring instructions. Call a number that you know, call a verified telephone number, and verify wiring instructions before you wire any money to a title company in regard to a real estate transaction.
These cyber criminals are very, very astute at the email process, and they will have an email that looks like it's coming from, say, Chicago Title. It might be Chicago Title, it'll be something that looks very similar, and the phone number will be very similar.
That's very true, and if they lure you to call the number that they've given you, you'll be talking to one of the criminals, and they will say, oh yes, this is right.
Yeah, and it's not right. So find the right number for Chicago Title, get it from your realtor, and verify with the known number for Chicago Title or any other title company dealing with.
That's correct.
You guys are not the only ones that deal with this, are you?
everyone in the business, everyone in the industry is fighting this battle every day. And it's so important that an individual, and frequently they will get an email that appears to come from a title company, and it will say, oh, we've changed our wiring instructions. No title company ever changes their wiring instructions. But before you wire at all, pick up the phone, verify those wiring instructions.
And not from the phone number that's on the email.
Not from the phone number on some phony email. Go to the internet, no matter what title company you're dealing with, get a real phone number and call and verify wiring instructions.
Yeah. I've got something kind of outside your realm that I'm going to ask you about, and that is interest rates. SWBC Mortgage is that's kind of our base that we kind of judge our interest rates by. By the way, Dean has a head cold this morning. He is not radio worthy, he says. You couldn't understand him. But do give him a call at 858-7770. If you need to make a home loan, I'm sure he'll feel better by Monday. But I'm seeing a little bit of predatory lending coming back again with higher interest rates, and they're making riskier loans. That's a caution, because I think we're a little bit in a bubble. Not a little bit. I think we're in a huge bubble. And that could burst and we could be in trouble. But predatory lending always is toward the burst of the bubble. And I'm seeing that kind of creep back in. What do you see?
I think you're right. I think there are people out there who are making loans to people and trying to convince people perhaps to borrow more than they can truly afford or truly justify. And again, these are a small minority of lenders. Most of the lenders that we work with are very reputable. And I would urge someone to stay with a reputable lender. Don't borrow more than you can afford to repay. And I think there's a little bit of that coming into our market. But I'm hoping that people have long memories and remember that, you know, when you borrow the money, you really do have to pay it back.
Well, and you get really aggravated when the lender asks you to verify where did this $400 come from that you deposited into your checking account? Well, I sold Grandpa's rifle. Well, I'm going to have a bill of sale to prove that. Well, you get real aggravated at stuff like that. But the fact is, a good lender is going to be asking you to verify everything. So, Ken McBride, Chicago Title, I appreciate that you came, and you're always a wealth of knowledge, and I want you to come back soon because we've got a lot more to talk about. And next week, you guys save up those roof questions because Larry Robbins is going to come and tell you how to track down that leak and how to fix it. That'll be next Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000, KTOK.